Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me here is Nate from Strictly Diesel. And so we're here at your service, and I'll turn off my speakers so that Gil doesn't get really mad at us. And I'll turn up my headphones just a little bit. Are your headphones okay?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about diesels and gas, motorhomes, and you drove up here with a, what was that, an Articat?
Yeah, Articat.
Diesel quad. I've never seen one before in my life.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that? First of all, did your wife say it was okay? Because when you ride it, does it smoke?
Oh, yeah, it smokes.
Okay.
Yeah, you know it's a diesel.
So you're going to go into the wind a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you don't want to go against it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you haven't had it out yet.
Oh, no, we've had it out. Normally at a racetrack is where we use it the most, so believe it or not.
Okay. So, pulling stuff around and stuff like that?
Pulling stuff, getting from each side of the track to the other.
One to the other?
Yeah.
Okay. So have you had an opportunity off-road?
Not yet. I need to.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think it's going to be able to climb a wall if you can hang on?
It'll climb a wall for sure.
How many forward speeds?
High or low.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay. Four-wheel drive and high or low.
Okay. And so it's got one of those centrifugal clutches kind of things where it's got a beveled, shivs or something like
something
that?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have Hondas and Yamahas. And if I had something that smoked more than my truck, there was a guy up in Payson that drove a little Mitsubishi truck, right-hand drive. It's a 650 cube CC motorcycle engine.
Yeah.
And it has air. You turn on the air and it drops 20 miles per hour off your speed.
Yeah.
So I've been teaching my grandsons how to drive it, and they have to shift with their left hand.
Oh, nice.
So when I got it, 602-508-096. Yeah, I had to give the phone number. 602-508-0960. If you have a question about cars or diesels, we can probably help you out. So I'm driving home, and I'm excited to drive this thing. And so I pull up to the intersection, and I turn on the left turn signal, and the wipers flap. So I turn them off, and I go to the next traffic light, and I'm going, okay, it was just an electrical. So I hit the wipers come on. So I just quit turning on. Yeah, I didn't have any signals.
Yeah.
The turn signal's ever on the right. It's closest to the door, which makes all the sense in the world. This is after 2 hours of chasing wires to find out if the turn signals are actually on that circuit and if somebody crossed them up. So finally, Renee goes, let me try it. And so she's in there playing with everything, and I thought the right side would be high beams, low beams, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
So that's the first time I've been wrong in 20 years, according to my wife. And so
I'd like to hear her side of that story. But
you don't. No, you don't. She's just a habitual liar. We've been married. We'll be married 46 years in February.
Congratulations.
And it's 12 years of happiness for me, and the rest have been kind of iffy. She's like my mother. She tells me what to do. You know, I'm like Dennis the Menace. I get sent to the corner every once in a while.
Oh, that's funny.
So at the end of we're already in trouble.
We got her.
All righty. Who's Gil? Who is it?
It's Vicky.
Oh, well, I know we're already in trouble. Vicky, good morning to you.
Good morning. How the heck are you?
You know, I'm better than the average bear.
I have no doubt of that. I'm going back with my 69 Chevy,
okay.
The one that was slow starting in the morning, and you said that I should bet Billy at 25th Street Automotive that he couldn't figure it out. Well, it wasn't the plugs on the bottom of the carburetor.
Okay. It was the choke pull-off or the choke?
The accelerator pump.
Oh, okay. Okay. So do I have to pay him or not?
Yeah. and he was, it's odd because, you see, I bought the truck from the second owner. It's got 178,000 original miles on it. And he said because the carburetor still had the, what the heck do you call that coating on it? He felt that it was the original one-pot carb.
Wow. He would know.
Yeah, grateful that it lasted 50 years. I don't see anything coming out of Chevrolet the last 50 years now. But I do have another question I asked you last year about. I usually start my Jeep and warm it up and then go feed the horses. And then, you know, after the Jeep's been running a while. You said that's fine for a 97 Cherokee. How long can I warm up the 50 C10 because it doesn't have fuel injection and it doesn't have full synthetic oil.
You can do it as little or as long as you want. I wouldn't do it longer than black smoke time. So,
I've never seen black smoke out of that truck.
Okay. Well, when the choke flap is shut, you're gonna see black smoke and smell it. But as that carbureted motor warms up, the choke flap is going to open slowly, and you're not going to know that unless you take the air filter off. But the high idle will stay there. So if you tap the throttle and it goes from high idle to normal idle, then you're warmed up. You know, you can get out, Vicki, and open the hood and grab a hold of the upper radiator hose, and if it's warm, then you can do that. But to answer your question, what do you think, Nate? 3 minutes?
Yeah, 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah,
easy.
In this time of the year,
yeah.
3 to 5 minutes. But I want to correct you, Vicki. I've only been wrong once in my life, and when I said to you the wells were leaking, I was thinking that the accelerator pump was bad. And when the wells leak, then the fuel level drops overnight, which means that the accelerator pump doesn't have any fuel in the cylinder that it lives in. So that's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, of course. I can go back and listen to it, but thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Now,
it was a good story.
What did he do?
Did he
just replace the accelerator pump?
Oh, he rebuilt the carburetor. My God, it was due for it. It was built in the year of Woodstock and the moon landing, and, you know,
yeah.
It was time for it to be rebuilt.
That's perfect. And I am quite sure that there's a noticeable improvement in drivability and idle quality and cold weather starting, because he's good with that and he has gray hair.
I really expect both Bills and Mr. Hoffman, their mechanic.
Okay. All righty. Well, I'll call him and ask him how much I owe him, but I'll raise my hand and say he did a better job. Now, here's the deal. He has your truck in front of you, and I'm looking at your truck through the phone line, so that's my defense.
Oh, I think you do a great job despite that.
I know, but everybody in the studio is laughing. So,
not laughing.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
Really. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you, Vicki. Thank you very much. That's very nice of you. Alrighty, I'm going to put Billy at 21st Street Auto. Never say his name again. And 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto. Ellen's at the front counter. And don't think you're going to be able to buffalo her with car talk. Larry's in the back along with, I think his name is Jeremy or Jason. Jeremy, he has every ASE test that they make.
He's good.
Every single, he's got paint and body, transmissions, engine, diesel. He has big truck. He has air brakes. He has everything. When I had him on the air, if I'm not mistaken, he was one of two in the United States that had every ASE test.
Wow.
So I offered him a really good job, but his boss was sitting in the studio with me, so it didn't really work out really well. But anyway, from auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, they can do a lot. I want to remind you that he had a BMW in there after somebody had bid like $1,300 because it was blowing water out of the vents. So when he turned on the air conditioning, it literally would blow water out of the vents. Took it over to Harker's, and Bob and Jeremy were working on it, and they figured that the evaporator case, which is behind the glove box, is full of water. So they lift it up in the air, they find the drain hose, they stick a piece of coat hanger up there, all of a sudden they're covered with yucky water.
Yep.
So then they take, this is funny, they take an electric leaf blower and they tape over all but one duct. Then they put the electric leaf blower in the duct and we blow the water out of the evaporator case.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was ingenious.
Yeah.
But anyway, the customer was pretty doggone happy at the end of the day, but that was worth a second pair of eyes.
Absolutely.
So that's a good idea to do that. So that's Larry Harker Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. So diesels, are they easier to work on today or harder to work on today?
Depends on who you talk to, I guess.
Okay, I'm asking you.
I think they're easier, honestly.
I do, too.
Yeah?
I do, too. Yeah. We have a lot more to look at and talk to than we ever had before.
Absolutely.
So we can go in and look at different parameters.
Yeah.
Folks need to know that the parameters mean something to us.
Oh, yeah.
The numbers could be 1 through 5, but if you got a scanner and the code reader at the Three Whisker Kid at AutoZone and all those other places, that code reader tells you nothing.
No.
The code reader's like a thermometer. It tells you you have a fever, but it doesn't tell you what's wrong. So he's going to tell you it's a mass airflow sensor so he can sell you something.
Right.
But in reality, it's almost always not. You're starting to dive into gas stuff.
We are. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We found that 25% of the O2 sensor codes are caused by a plugged fuel filter.
I believe it.
Because the injector, the computer saying, instead of going, the computer goes, and it's spraying fire hose gas in that motor. And the O2 sensor says, I don't see much gas. And the volume of gas is substantial because of the plug fuel filter.
Right.
It's substandard, I should say.
O2 sensor's the messenger always, you know, don't shoot the messenger.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
On the other end of the spectrum, 25% of the time, we do end up with an O2 sensor. But when you got four in a truck or a car,
yeah.
So you got two pre and two post, you better figure out which one it is.
Exactly.
But the guy at the auto parts store is going to be happy to sell you all four for $400 or $500.
Exactly.
Then you got to figure out which one's the pre and the post and which one's the left and the right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's not likely to know to be able to help you.
No, sometimes the part number tells you, but yeah.
And you can do that. You can go on the internet and query the part number. And,
sure.
And under the best of conditions, it'll tell you pre and post, but it may not tell you passenger or driver. So, folks, on the catalytic converter with two catalytic converters on your car, we have a O2 sensor in front of the catalytic converter and behind the catalytic converter. And the front one says how much fuel is coming in to the catalytic converter or temperature. It could also be temperature.
Yep.
The back one tells how much the converter consumed of that fuel, and it also tells temp. So if you have temperature going into the front side at 300 Fahrenheit and you got temperatures coming out of the back side at 300 Fahrenheit, the cat's not lit.
Yeah. No.
So there's a problem there.
There's a problem.
So then on the other side, if you have 0.1 on the front side and you got 0.5 on the back side, then the catalytic converter's not working at all.
Exactly.
Because we're not dropping that. So I should have turned that around. Five in and five out.
Yes.
So
yes.
The cat's not lit. So our barbecue, which is a catalytic converter, as we pass the exhaust through it, the barbecue is red hot and it's supposed to consume whatever is left in the air and send out of carbon dioxide out of the back end.
Yep.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Nate from Strictly Diesel is here, and we'll be back right after this.
The mechanic raised up from
all righty, 21 minutes after the hour. I got to make sure the speakers are off and all that other kind of stuff. Oh, I know what I need to do. I need to push those buttons back off. So I should be sounding okay, right, Gil? Okay, all right. Gil's our engineer. He's been saddled with me since 2011. He wonders what he did wrong.
Would I get mad?
Yeah. No, he never. I don't ever see you mad.
Well, no,
but
I never get mad.
He has to often handle those. Mr. Estrada, the general manager's calling you. And so he goes into his office and he sits down. He knows what's coming. Did you two really, that's what they start with, you two, and Gil goes, he throws me under the bus. That was Mark's idea.
You know, he's dropping Mark.
And you know what? Actually, he saved me from a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he'll say, time to take a break. And we're not even ready for a break, but he's telling me to shut the heck up.
Yeah.
So anyway, Gil's been around. I think you've been with me since day one, haven't you?
Actually, Jeremy started with you, and then I took over.
That's exactly right. You're live right now, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right, because I can't be talking to you, and then, you know, you're talking just in my ears. So thank you for that. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. Last week we did 21 callers
in
2 hours.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's the record that we've done. So yeah. I think we could do it again if you guys would just wake up and drink a little coffee and call us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You know what's fun about this is sometimes we go to a husband-wife kind of show where the husband says this and the wife says this, or they don't agree with what to do. And do we put premium in our car, or regular? Or do we put the $30 wiper blades on, or do we do the $8 wiper blades and all that other kind of stuff? So those stereotypical things that cause divorce. And so, all righty. Well, I better tell him who this is brought to you by, and that's Kurtz Auto. He's up by you.
Yeah, he is.
And he's a good guy. He's at Bell and I-17 Northeast Corner. He's got Jeff and Eric. They're both masters. And Kurt's a master, and between the three of them, they can usually hit a home run. They can usually find your problem and bid the repair and then successfully repair it, because you don't want to go in and they call you and they tell you this and it's $200 repair. When you get your car back, you still got the problem. That doesn't happen at Kurt's. And I can't tell you how many times that I've had a caller call from that area, geographical area, and I've sent them to Kurtz, and then they call me back and say thank you. So all of our shops will do that, but Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, Northeast Corner. I'm going to do an ad for myself. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
I don't care if they like it or not. I'm talking about the radio station. This gentleman died. He was a friend of mine. He owned a machine shop, and I've known him for 30 years. And he had a huge selection of Cushman motorcycles that he had refurbished.
Wow.
And he was a gun guy. And, I mean, he had motorcycles, everything. So he passed away. So I got a call the other day, and they said, come over and take a look at this. It's a 79 Suburban. It's one of, like, seven that has a factory five-speed.
Wow.
And it's four-wheel drive, three-quarter ton. So he had taken this thing, and he had put a posi in the rear. He put a 8,000-pound winch on the front and a 6,000-pound winch on the back. He had lifted it. It's got a 5.7 port fuel-injected 350 motor in it.
Wow.
And a 79 Suburban.
Yeah.
And he used Jim Schaffner from Arizona Speed and Marine, who's a friend of mine, to make it all happen. Then he put two fuel tanks in it, saddle tanks, and a main tank. So all he does is he has two pumps in each one of those saddle tanks and the main tank. So he flips one to fill, actually two to fill one, and he just watches the gauge.
Yeah.
Comes up and he shuts it off.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? It has air conditioning, and we converted it to 134.
Nice.
So it was 12, five-speed manual, 350 horse. It has 133,000 miles. We don't know that that's correct, but that's what it's showing on the odometer.
Yeah.
AC upgrade, new compressor-related parts. Get this, four-wheel disc brake.
Wow.
Four-wheel disc brake.
Nice.
Now, this is the epitome of a hunting wagon.
Oh, yeah.
It has a deck on the top of it. You pull the pins, and the deck slides up over the cab. So you sit up there, you cover yourself with camo, and you look like an idiot, but you're hunting. And you're watching the animals. I made some friends with that comment.
Sure.
Anyway, it's got brand-new shocks. It has 140-gallon main tank and then two saddle tanks. We talked about that. Filters everywhere. He has a stainless steel water tank in one of the back barn doors.
Wow.
So anyway, it has new tires, new shock absorbers. Everything's been done because we ran it through, and we wanted to drive it. So it had been sitting for, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Wow.
So anyway, I bought it, and the price is $8,500. So it's hunting season. And this is a Suburban. If you get stuck in this, you're really dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just, this is, you can't get this
anywhere.
Stuck. Yeah, I mean, you've got a winch to pull you backwards and a winch to pull you frontwards.
Exactly.
And my son goes, well, what happens if somebody's stuck and you tie yourself to the tree behind you to winch him out of the Grand Canyon? I said, you're just going to pull the Suburban in half. That's all you're going to do.
Basically, yeah.
And if he's in the Grand Canyon, just leave him there.
Right.
Just tell him you'll call for somebody. So anyway. Yeah, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, extendable, I think I told you, ladders on both front and back, surface area, water tank, a roof-mounted spotlight, and it's got a high-lift jack locked on the front bumper with the winch.
That thing will go anywhere.
And it really will. But it's the epitome of a hunting wagon.
Absolutely.
It's not something you could have your 16-year-old son take this on a date. It's a 6.5-speed. He's not gonna be burning rubber in this big three-quarter ton. But nevertheless, if that's something for you, I was going to get my cell phone. That's a bad idea. Yeah. mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. And we have a caller, Gil. Who might that be?
That would be Sue.
Sue, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
I have a question about diesel motor homes.
Okay.
You have people that do service on that?
Nate?
I do not.
Okay.
Just because of the room and size I need for it.
Okay.
But what brand of motorhome, is it by chance? Or what do you know what the motor is? What they call that? Is it a Cat? Is it Cummins? Is it
any of that sound good to you?
Yes.
Okay. What part of town are you in?
West Side.
Oh boy.
Any side in town?
Okay.
I think just one big town.
Well, I can tell you we do. We're at Warner and I-10, and we have 14-foot doors, and we have a hoist that will lift one end of your diesel or the other, but I can pick up a 30-foot gas motor, but I can't pick up a big diesel. But there isn't any service that we can't provide you, plus our staff probably has 50 or 80 years of motorhome experience. So
that sounds good to me.
What year is it? Do you know that? That's okay.
It's before 2011.
Okay, fair enough. And it's got a diesel. Do you get to drive it, or does he put on his muscular shirt and drive it all the time?
I drove it last time.
Good. My wife did, too. Yeah, my wife and my daughters drove our motorhomes.
Yeah, there you go.
I used to drive eastbound on Texas on I-10, and the kids would drive. I have a picture of my 12-year-old grandson driving the motorhome, and I put a beer can in his right hand. And it's the best picture I've ever taken in my life.
Yeah.
People don't understand that we were stopped, but we were stopped on the freeway. Yeah, nobody was there.
Right.
But I wasn't. So anyway, they'd get off the highway at the interchange, and then they would accelerate back on. So we would take every single exit, so they got the feel of the brakes, and they got feel of the acceleration under merge and all that kind of stuff. So the answer is, Sue, that's pretty good. Not too many wives can drive, and I'm happy for you. But we're at Warner and I-10. My last name is Salem. And if you call, you'll talk to my daughter, Andy, and she'll help you out. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Can't even hear myself anymore. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We have one caller, 602-508-0960. We can take five. So one is one and four. It means four. There's four open lines, right, Nate? Okay, hold on a minute, Nate. Talk. Push your button so you can talk.
There we go. Yeah.
Nevertheless, I know one and four is five. I'm learning that. I'm about ready to take some of my math classes. Speaking of math classes, Auto Dynamics is up in Sun City. He's been around a long time. Chuck Nide opened up Auto Dynamics, and I've known Chuck since 1973. They opened this facility in 1982, and guess what? Chuck is retired, and his son, Derek, is now running the operation. The second generation of an auto repair shop, in my opinion, is always a little better than the first. And so it's the kids just learned from our bad habits, I think, is what it really is. So anyway, if you're in Sun City, he's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Auto Dynamics, a good repair shop to go to. Let's go to the phones, and let's start with, let me get the paperwork out here. Roy, good morning. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark. I've got a 2008 F-350 Super Duty.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to replace the engine in it after I bought it used and thinking, I got another 200,000 miles going.
All right. Hold on. I'm testing Nate here. What motor's that got in at that 08? Is that a
6.4?
6.4.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's okay. Better than a 6 liter.
They're cousins.
Not much.
Yeah, okay.
Not much, but
well, I was trying to make him feel better, Nate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, all right, you got the 08 F-350 with the 6.4.
Okay, when I first got it, it's got the dual filter, one's down on the rail below the seat, past the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. And they've routed all kinds of stuff to make it harder to get to. But anyway, when I first did it, I drained the little bowl, you know, the water bowl, and then I take the cap off and put a bucket in there, and it catch a little bit of fuel. Mm-hmm. Well, now I changed filter. Then the last three times I did it, the fuel never stops running out of there.
Nate's shaking his head. He knows what that is.
Anytime we do these, whether it's a 6 liter or the 6.4, they're both the same as far as that fuel filter location. We take baths. Depending on where your tank is, they do siphon. So you will do some fuel filter changes where that fuel is always going to be draining.
So what do you do?
Do it as quickly as possible.
Okay, so you just yank the old one and stick the new one up there and get...
Yeah.
Now, this is an opportunity for your wife to get involved in the business. And if she's not been helping you and she drives that truck, this would be a prime opportunity to get an apron for, put her on a, what do they call those little rep?
Creeper.
Creeper.
Yeah.
And give her some rubber gloves and a pair of goggles and just have, say, honey, spin this off and then real fast spin this on.
Yeah. You know, if it was a matter of just doing that, it would be great. I'm laying under a raised truck, reaching up there, and it's hard. Once you get the cap off, you have to fish it around stuff to get it off.
Yes, you
do. And to pull the filter out, you have to do the same thing.
Right. Is this four-wheel drive?
Yes.
Okay. Try a longer extension with whatever socket you're using that goes past the transfer case. So it's a fairly long extension. You're talking 3 foot if, you know, or put a couple together to get you some length to it. And that makes my life a lot easier when I have a longer extension to pull that cap off.
My problem starts after I get that cap off.
Yeah, you do have to fish the lid out.
I can't fish it out. It's hard. Well, it's not. I evidently get it off, but you're forcing it around stuff and moving lines with your hand. And here I am. I've got fuel all down my arm, on my chest, soaking my T-shirt.
Yep, yep.
And it might drain a gallon and a half out while I'm doing that.
So you mentioned it was up in the air. Is it? Do you have it on jack stands or a lift?
No. It's just a raised truck, and I'm laying under.
Okay. So try this. Again, pay attention to the fuel level when you're doing this, just for curiosity. But raise the front of the truck. Even if it's just on the driver's side, put a floor jack under it, raise it. So now you're changing the equilibrium of the truck a little bit to maybe point it back to the tank instead of pointing it to the front of the vehicle and see if that slows the drain down.
Because
do siphon. So.
Have you got two tanks on that?
Yes. Okay. No. I only have one.
Okay. All right.
37 gallons, I think.
And you know, don't be complaining and whining, because I'm a gas guy, and when gasoline runs down my armpit catches fire, and then I've got a rash for the next 2 weeks. So your diesel fuel, all you guys do is stink.
Yeah.
And I'm walking around with my arms up in the air like a damn chicken because my underarms are burning.
Yeah, I feel real bad for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I bet all your guys feel bad for you when you're over there telling them how to get under and get it done.
And you know what? I was mad at the guys. I came today and somebody washed out their ramen plate in the sink and didn't bother to wash it all down. And then somebody else took all the ice out and didn't put any water back in. So I got a padlock on the refrigerator, and I shut the water off to the sink. And so Monday morning, we'll have a discussion after they figure out. And I also shut the water off in the urinal in the bathroom, in the men's bathroom.
Yeah, that's going
to be... They'll be taking you to HR.
That's okay. HR is run by my son, so... Anyway, Roy, well, good luck to you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you. I think that'll work for me. All right, thanks.
Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We can handle diesel. We can handle some motorhome. We can handle, you know, maintenance issues and stuff like that. How often is he supposed to change those fuel filters?
15,000, I'd recommend.
Okay. Yeah. And if he's using a synthetic, that's pretty close to an oil change? Pretty close?
Yeah. If he's doing okay on his regens and so forth, the 6.4s are good for overfilling the crankcase. But, yeah, he could do... On a good synthetic, probably 15,000.
Yeah. So
I get nervous with that, but...
I understand.
Yeah.
Now, the difference between the semi-synthetic and the blended is the 1540 is typically a blend, and the the 540 is the synthetic.
Yes.
So you always know that.
Yes.
And, of course, what the engine takes is written on the oil cap.
Yep.
So there's no question on what you should have.
Yep.
I'm running mine between 10 and 12, my Dodge, and I'm not running any oil consumption problems. And I've run some oil analysis the last two oil changes, and I don't have a growth of water or fuel or metal. So I think I'm in pretty good shape.
Are you doing good?
So that's kind of what we offer. If somebody gets nervous, they pay for it, of course.
Sure.
But then, and we also have a baseline in where to go. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. I guess I should push all the buttons. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes, and we're not paying attention to what we really should be doing. So it's all your fault, Nate.
It is.
Sue called back, and she had a question, and I think she was asking about tow dollies. I think. A tow dolly is something that you put on the back of your motorhome, and it has two tires and a couple of cups. So you put the front wheels of your car or the back wheels of your car in the tow dolly, and you tow it behind your motorhome.
Yeah.
So I think she meant tow dolly. So, Sue, I'd like you to call back. You don't have to be on the air. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and talk to Gil, and we'll get your question answered. If it's a tow dolly, then I would go to, what's the name of that RV place?
Little Dealer.
That's one. That's in Mesa. But they used to have those RV big repair shops. There was one in Mesa, but I haven't heard of one lately.
I haven't either.
But anyway, I think I could help you. I would want you to call our shop and talk to my son, Alan. And Alan would be one to be able, and also we need to know what kind of car you have and how much it weighs. And that's an important consideration.
Yeah.
On the door sticker of the car, it'll say GVW, and that's gross vehicle weight, and that's the number we want that's on the door sticker. And See if you do this and you wipe your nose on my mic,
We
can all hear you.
Yeah,
okay.
I just did that. Rubbing my face.
Nevertheless, Jim, good morning to you. How can we help you today, Jim?
Yeah, I have a 2008 Honda Civic with 200K on it. Runs great. And I'm afraid to take it on long trips because got the original fuel pump and coils on it. And I'm just wondering if it would be prudent just to replace those.
What do you think?
As a matter of course, you know.
Older cars are tough, but I would say it probably would be.
The fuel pump I'm going to go with.
Yeah, fuel pump for sure.
Yeah. I don't know about the coils.
Yeah.
Maybe we put a coil in a Honda once a year, twice a year. So I'm thinking your odds
Honda's
are...
Honda's got those down, but yeah, fuel pump.
Yeah, fuel pump. How about a timing belt? Have you done that yet?
No, it doesn't have one. It's got a timing chain.
Okay. See, don't try to embarrass me like that again, Jim. We won't ever let you come on the air. All right.
Okay.
If it's got a chain on it, then what about belts and hoses?
Yeah.
I just replaced the radiator hoses.
Okay.
And the heater hoses, boy, I don't know about those. They look like they're kind of hard to get to.
Oh, yeah.
They're the originals. And I found that while I have you on the air, the Japanese rubber stuff, it lasts two or three times longer than American stuff.
Now, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you because there's no such thing as a Honda, Hyundai factory that makes rubber hoses. They buy from where everybody else does. So they say that, when I know this to be factual, between 25 and 40% of the new Ford trucks is made offshore. And they don't even know this, but when you tell a guy from the Ford that he's got Hitachi rotating electrical, which is starters and alternators, then he's got Denso ignition components and computer stuff, they don't like to hear that because I want to buy Ford.
Yeah.
So I want to tell you, we are perfectly fine with Continental hoses, which is what they have on the Fords, and there are a lot of others. Now, price is going to be somewhat of a determination because the cheap stuff's going to be a little cheaper. And the market's bigger. The margin's bigger. The newer stuff is going to cost more. But I want to tell you something. I'm 8 years and 80,000 miles on hoses and belts. So from my comfort zone, you're kind of out of whack. The heater hoses aren't easy to do, but I would have those done. But fuel pump, hoses, and belts, go.
I'd check the radiator, too, just because plastic radiator over time and mileage tends to get more brittle as the years go on. So
I agree with you. And
yeah.
And when you drive this on vacation, are you going to go in the summer or the winter?
It varies. I used to tow it. It was interesting. You brought up tow dollies. I have a story there. But it varies. It's sometimes it sits here in storage over the summer while I'm up north. And just varies all over the place.
Okay.
And I would be afraid to drive it to Yuma, for instance.
Okay. Well, here's why I ask you. I was thinking you were traveling in this. I missed the part about this being behind your coach.
I have a small motorhome.
Okay. So I was asking you because I was thinking you were traveling. And so if you were in the cooler climate, then the radiator may not be something that you need to spend a bunch of money on. But if you're going to be traveling in Arizona and the Interstate 10 in summertime between here and Florida, then I'm with Nate. The cooling system has to be tough. But if you have a tow dolly, who gives a heck? I mean, if the car breaks down, you load it on the tow dolly and take it someplace. But I think fuel pump and the...
While we're on that subject, I understand you can get all aluminum radiators for them. Is that a good idea instead of the plastic?
You can get just about anything you want, and you'll pay for a step up. There's two trains of thought in our industry. There's some guys that say, I'm going to go with what the car came with, which is either brass or plastic or aluminum. And then there's guys that say, no, I'm going to improve it. I got a Corvette right now, about a 76 Corvette that's been modified like crazy. And he brought it in for an overheat. We put a brand new four-row aluminum in this, and we can't get it not to run between 240 and 250. And the gauge is wrong. So when you gun the top hose and then the gauge, there's two different readings. The gauge shows higher than the 240 coming out of the top of the thermostat.
Wow.
But we've had that thing for a month, and only on the highway. So we're thinking it's airflow that's causing this problem, because highway and around town we don't get those high temperatures, but I don't know. But, I mean, you can't argue with success, Jim. You've had a plastic radiator in there for a long time.
Yeah, it's amazing how these little cars hold up now.
Yeah, it's kind of like dance with the girl that you brung. So you got that radiator and it got you 200,000 miles. So I would give you the option if you were at my shop. What do you want? But if you were my father and I liked my father, then I would tell him just, dance with the girl you brung. Okay? Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, Gil, I just found out why we are having troubles with levels.
I think I found out myself, too.
No. I hear this button. If I go, right here, then I think we're fixed, right?
But yeah, you're stronger than ever.
Okay. Well, there's this little green button on my Comrex, and I don't have a clue as to why that one did that to me.
Technology.
Yeah. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you want me to bring any levels down, Gil, while we're sitting here and embarrassing me?
Those are fine right there.
Those are fine right there? Okay. All righty. Anyway, when it comes to looking at a car and telling them what you think, all I can do is tell them what I would do. But if I had a crystal ball, I'd be in Las Vegas.
Right.
But one of the things that I believe is based on my analysis, we're seeing 8-year-old hoses and belts cause problems. And if you blow a hose and think you're going to make it to the next exit and you drive it like that, there's a good chance that hose is going to cost you a bunch of money.
Absolutely.
So when you get to those kinds of things, you can kind of figure out for yourself what the heck you're supposed to be doing.
Yep. Yep.
When you see engine failures, we only see overheats. We don't see very often where they ran them low on oil or that they just blew up because they heavy mileage. Almost everything that comes into the but we're next to the freeway too. Almost everything. So are you?
Yeah, so are we.
Everything that comes in that needs a motor is almost always an overheat, and the story seems to be with a common theme. Well, it got up into the red, but I was only a mile from home. You hear that a lot.
Very similar. Yep, very similar.
So it's kind of one of those things where a tow truck would have been a lot cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So anyway, 602-508-0960. We've got time to take callers right now, but we're going to come back for a second hour, and Nate's going to stay with me. And again, if you have diesel questions, we were making fun of the guy with the Ford.
A little bit.
And when he said, I have a Ford F-350, and we're both looking at one another smiling, because I don't know about, I'm not going to comment, but I've heard that you've made millions and millions of dollars on the Ford.
Everyone thinks that. Yeah. That's what everyone thinks.
It is true. We've worked on that 6-liter a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And the 6-liter, when we start getting water in the oil, give me a square box of what you quote that for. Give me as little as and as much as.
Water in the oil?
Yeah, when we pop the EGR cooler or the oil cooler underneath the intake.
Oil in the coolant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's anywhere, depending on when we catch it, could be 2,000 to 6,000, depending on how bad it is.
Yes.
And what upgrades or what other things we can do to the vehicle to make it better. So.
Right, but we're going to do that when we take it apart to fix the beginning.
Yep.
So we're going to improve it because there's already stuff out there that's going to make it better.
Yep. Yep,
so those are the kinds of things. Now, not to compare anything, we're not seeing lots of problems with the Dodge 6-liter or the 6.7.
Overall, no.
Okay.
But they have their issues, too.
Okay.
Sure.
And they haven't been out as long as the 6-liter was.
No.
And so it's unfair, but tell me about the 7.3 from Ford.
That's still going, and that's been out forever.
And it is my opinion that you can sell that 7.3 for as much as you paid for it.
Pretty close nowadays.
Because it's a monster anyway,
yeah.
And it's the most dependable diesel engine. It, in my opinion, it's comparable to the 5.9 Cummins, but when you compare a 7.3 liter to a 5.9 liter, that 7.3 Ford's a monster.
It is. Absolutely.
But those two have the same kind of longevity life.
They do.
Trouble-free life.
Overall, they do.
Overall.
Yeah.
So, and so what do you think about the Dodge, the 6.7?
I like it.
Well, you drive one.
Oh, yeah, I drive one. Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Now, is it reliable? Absolutely.
Okay. So you said you've seen some of them that...
We've seen some head gasket failures, again, overheating, water pump concerns. There was a recall on mine for a water pump, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Obviously, the emission system has its issues here and there. So.
Yeah, I got a 12. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
No, you're right about that. You're right.
But overall, a very good truck, yeah.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm with you. But when you start putting twin... I mean, I know all kinds of idiots that put twin turbos on their car, and they run 1,500 EGR, and they blow the head gaskets or blow the heads clean off of them. You've seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you told me you just did something to your Dodge.
My truck does have a add-on turbo kit to it, yes.
Oh, and that means... Let me decipher that. You have twin turbos.
I have twins, yeah. Or compounds, or...
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not one turbocharger, you have two.
I have two.
Okay. And so what don't you do with that you may have done before? You don't probably drive that up a hill with a huge trailer with your foot on the floor.
No, not on the floor. You don't need to anymore.
No.
It just drives itself, honestly. So
I believe you.
Yeah.
I believe you.
Yeah.
It is. We put twin turbos on a Corvette. And the difference, it was between a bicycle and one of those road racer bikes that does 200 miles an hour.
It was
a big difference. And I explained to people this. Remember the old Electrolux vacuum cleaners where it was a canister on the ground? It looked like a hot dog on the ground. And
yeah.
It has a suction port on one end connected to a hose, and then it's got the exhaust port.
Right.
Okay. So on the suction side, you hear, okay. Now, if I were to take an air hose and put in my lips and pop the air hose, I'd blow my lungs up.
Right.
Right? But if you took the suction part of that vacuum and you attached it to the exhaust part of that vacuum, that's a turbo.
There you go.
Because instead of letting the motor suck air in, we're kind of pushing air in.
We're pushing, absolutely.
So when you breathe, you go... But when the motor breathes with a turbo or a twin turbo in your case... When you go and you breathe in, we're blowing air into you.
Yeah.
Big air.
Yeah.
So we would certainly blow up their lungs with any kind of numbers that we're talking about. And that's not, we're not suggesting that you do that either.
No, absolutely not.
But that's just a visual on what, and a supercharger is the same way. We pack the cylinder with air, so we're pushing air in instead of sucking air in. And there's a big difference.
Making that motor more efficient.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting here next to me. And you're more than welcome to give us a call, 602-508-0960.
Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Gosh darn it, my headphones sound heavy. But anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm gonna put on my marriage counselor hat right now.
Are you?
Your wife said she'd like Quadden much better if she had her own.
Yeah, okay. She did say that, huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Polaris is my choice. I like Yamaha, too.
I like the Polaris.
Okay. A friend of mine owns a motorcycle shop in Casa Grande. It's called Adrenaline Motorsports. And he was like the number two dealer in the United States. And here's why.
Oh, wow.
Everybody else has the motorcycle, license, tax, mileage, you know, that kind of stuff. And then they have freight and get ready and build it. And then we put a desert protection package on it. And we have special oil on it. And then we have the only air that nobody else has in the tires. You know, it's called PAC, So we take the vehicle and we just pack it full of stuff. Desert protection packages, that's waxing it.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So he has the scooter, whatever you buy, sales tax and license. Nothing else.
Nice.
That's it. So I think you should get on the internet, go to Adrenaline Motorsports, and pick out which one you want. And I'm trying to help your marriage here.
Oh, yeah. 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 You're doing great.
Yeah. And so
Linda thanks you.
The Polaris, all my daughters and wives and stuff drive the Polarises, and typically they don't have a clutch, and they just have a – or they don't have a shift kind of a thing. But you can get those if you want. But, I mean, my grandkids drive them. So you shouldn't have any problem. And then if you get a really nice one, don't let Nate get on it. Just keep the keys yourself and stuff like that.
There you go.
Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. Been around since 1970. He's been providing expert auto repair kit, repaired work and light truck and maintenance services to Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I really can recommend. It's not that there's not good shops in Mesa, but the ones that have applied have not been able to pass the muster. So Thompson's has ASE-certified technician Brian and Thelma. Their families have been involved in car repair since the late 60s and early 70s. Brian's a Vivian, and then obviously Thompson is Thelma. So the two of them have names that everybody, the old-timers in Mesa, know about. So Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. Thomas, you're up first. How can we help you?
Well, I do have an ex-wife problem, but I think I'll talk about the Explorer.
No, that's fine. I can help you on either one.
Well, I don't know which one's the Explorer, but we'll just start with the. I have a 99 Ford Explorer. It's got 230,000 miles on it. It's got the 5.0. It's an all-wheel drive. I bought it a year ago up in Washington, pulled my boat back all the way from there with it. I pulled my 19-foot trailer. And I haven't had any problems with it at all. But, and I know that's amazing, but the one thing that just happened was on my last trip, the gas gauge, it doesn't bounce up and down, but it does move up and down. So I'm going and it'll hit, let's say, you know, the three quarters mark, then it'll go back up to the one full mark, and then it sometime it'll be in between. Then it goes back down. So it's not a huge problem, except I don't exactly know how much gas I have in the car because it moves. But it's not bouncing; it's just moving. Okay. And I changed the gas filter. Somebody told me it might be that, and they said it needed to be done. But anything else you could help me with?
Nate, you got any ideas?
Most likely, it's probably going to be a sending unit issue.
Yeah,
with what's inside the tank.
I want you to picture a piano key, a keyboard. Okay, and I want you to picture you take your finger and you go, you know, across all the keys on the piano. That's what the sending unit looks like. You only have two choices. I would go get some Tecron from a Chevron gas station, maybe even a self-serve gas station. And I'm told that the Tecron can sometimes clean up the moss and stuff that ends up on the keyboard, so to speak, of the sending unit. And you have nothing to lose by that. All we're using it for is that and that only. But the other option is to drop the tank, replace the sender and the fuel pump, but do the fuel pump at the same time.
I was going to say, back to our previous conversation, at 200,000, it's probably not a bad idea, unknown to him, to put a new fuel pump and sending unit in it.
I'm with you. Now, we can change the, we can do the fuel pump, you're right, but on the gauge, what happens if this is a bad connection? I'm thinking out loud here.
Yeah.
At the back of the gauge.
Could be that too, yeah.
And then we go in to do the fuel pump and the sending unit, and we end up with the same problem as the gauge. I'm going to give you something to do, Thomas, and I don't want you to ever say where you got this information, okay?
Okay.
All right, when you're driving down the road and the gauges start acting up, I want you to beat on the top of the dash above the gauge like you're going to kill a big bug, but not enough to damage the pad on the dashboard. And then the question is does it change? That's all I'm asking. And you say, oh, it goes down and stays down. Or you say, oh, it begins to work, or you say, oh, it goes back up to full, even though I know I don't have full. So when you look at it okay. in that fashion, that's important as we go along.
Okay.
So
yeah,
that's
so you did kind of solve two things there. So I could take my ex-wife, which would make me probably mad enough to bang on the dashboard, and there we go. I got two things done.
You know what? We're going to say goodbye to you because we've got women in the studio.
Just kidding, guys. Yeah, and, everybody just kidding.
No, I know. I
yeah.
know.
And we appreciate the humor. Nate and I tease about ex-wives and women and our male customers with hairy chests and clean fingernails and they tell us how to fix their cars and stuff like that. So, Nate, you're shaking your head.
No, I'm shaking my head.
I got to tell you, I'm dumb enough that I'm the guy who drove that extra exit with the red thing on, and I had to get a new engine. Not on this car, but
okay.
So I can blame myself for something like that too. So
no, that I mean, Nate, have you ever popped a motor?
Well, yeah, working on one, I did. Yeah, okay. Yeah, not my own, but
it doesn't make any difference how you popped it. You were in charge of the
mess. I was in charge, and I made the mess. Yeah,
and you made the mess.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same track.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So anyway, and we're going to go to Harry because we got to get Harry. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning. Very informative show.
Thank you.
I had a problem with a Chevy truck with the fuel gauge going, and I just watched my mileage, what I did with that. But anyway, the point, I've got a 1997 F-250. With the 7.3 has I got 1.25 out of the first engine, and I put another new engine in it, rebuilt. So I've got another 50,000 miles on that. I towed way heavier boat than I should have from here to Las Vegas. And my transmission just burned up. You have a shop that you would recommend to rebuild this transmission? Number one, and number two, my wife's getting ready to retire, and she wants to get a much nicer fifth wheel than the camper that we have now, and she wants a better and a newer truck. She's tired of running around in this 97 when we're traveling.
Okay, now, let me explain, Nate. He's throwing us under the bus. He's asking us for three decisions, yeah. And then he's going to go back and say, Mark and Nate said this.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're going to be in trouble one way or the other. So should you sell the truck? The answer is go talk to your wife.
Yeah.
But,
and
you know,
if you sell
she's not adverse. I've been offered just under $13,000 for it. I kept it, you know, like new. But she just wants to, since the tags and insurance and everything are complete or non-existent almost, she's like, well, why don't we just go ahead and keep it and use it as a second vehicle, or, you know, when neighbors come, you know, friends and family come, they can have a vehicle to, instead of renting, that type of stuff. So I don't know.
This is called dancing.
It is.
Yeah. He's just dancing right now. He's trying to justify the need for a new truck. That's all that's going on here. So, whether you get a new one or not, if he's going to get a new one and he's going to haul a fifth wheel, which one would you tell him to look at?
Man, all three are so.
Well, I'll tell you, Nate. Really, I've met you. I've come up to your shop a couple times.
I appreciate that.
That I don't buy new. Except for this 97, I bought brand new. But I always try to let somebody else take the hit on a vehicle initially. But
sure.
I'm looking relatively new, you know, with a diesel. You know, that Ford 6.7 seems to have a decent reputation. I've got friends that have the Ram, you know, they swear by those, what is that, the Cummins, isn't it?
Yes, the Cummins, yes, yeah. Absolutely. So,
but the weight is this fifth wheel is going to be about 11,000 pounds.
Let us address your questions. So,
As far as the 97 goes, I can help him with everything on that. So, for what that's worth, you know, yeah. If you want to come see us again, I'd appreciate it.
That's an easy one.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
And it's going to be cheaper to fix that one. I mean, for the license plates, and he said he wasn't going to buy new, but still the transition from one vehicle to the other, and then you buy a used one, and you don't know what you're getting,
right?
Because the guy in front of you could be standing there talking about it, and it's all a lie.
We do a pre-purchase inspection too. If you are looking at something that's lately used, we can have a look over for you and give you what we can see on it for sure.
Yeah, on the transmission, you had a transmission guy. Who would that be?
That'd be me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
y'all do that.
That's me.
Okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'll give you a call Tuesday. I've got surgery scheduled for Monday. So yeah, that'll be good.
And for that matter too, when you call, we can talk about the new used vehicle and you know, I can try and help you with that too. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
I can give him like a $500 off coupon. I'll give it to you before you leave.
I'm sure he'd like that.
Yeah, he would like it. I don't know about you, but anyway. You know what? We're going to go past our break real quick, and we're going to go to Mike. Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I read on the internet about Dodge was recalling a bunch of diesels, older ones and newer ones. They were starting fires through the catalytic converter. Is that true? They're burning a hole in it?
Not on the diesel side.
No.
Yeah. Both of us are shaking our heads right now. We haven't heard that. Let me change the question. If there was a problem with the 6.7, what pattern failure do you see?
No real patterns, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say the same thing. Yeah. I don't see anything time and time and time again. Most everybody that's got them are happy with them.
There was a recall. May still be active on the 17 Dodges or newer Dodges for a water pump that caused the fire, but nothing on the catalytic converters that I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know that the internet chatter sometimes is quite I'm going to talk to Nate now. There's a lot of stuff on the internet that you got to roll your eyes on.
Oh, every day.
I mean, it's just an amazing. There's some hairy-chested kid that's 16 years old that's pretending like he's a 30-year veteran of diesels or airplanes or boats or whatever.
Right.
And he's telling everybody to skip the synthetic oil and go back to a 30 weight and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about all the different color coolants, and they're talking about spark plugs. And have you seen those E3 spark plugs?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the deal. I'm sending one spark down that wire. It's going to find the path of least resistance from those three terminals.
Exactly.
So we're not going to get three sparks. So you got all these hot rod, you know, Rapid Roy the race car boy has got all these E3 spark plugs that cost an arm and a leg to put in your car. But, boy, you feel better, and it does run faster. The problem is that VW bug just ate your lunch because you don't have any more power than you had before.
Exactly.
So 602-508-0195. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to join us. We've got three lines open right now, so all you got to do is give us a call, and we'll do the very best we can. And I probably have some feedback to you there, and I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry about that. Okay, let's go to the phones real quick and talk to David. He's been waiting a while. David, good morning.
Good morning. It's funny that you had the ad for Phoenix Auto Body, because that was one of the reasons I was calling.
Okay.
A while back, my wife got T-boned and the car got totaled, but they were awesome. They actually went and got the car from where the police had it towed after the accident, and it turns out that I had USA, and they're a preferred, like, underwriter, but authorized to do USA, so I didn't even have to get an adjuster out there. Now, he called me when the car hit 10 grand and said they're going to total it. But let me come get my stuff out of the car. He actually walked me back there. I even got the spare out of it and put in a new Keel I was going to buy, because they don't come with one.
Uh-huh.
But they were just awesome. And I've been meaning to make this call for 3 years, because it happened 3 years ago last week. But okay. I mean, it still reminds me of them. But the real reason I was calling, too, was I know you've done, you know, legal work, but I had a question. I have a 1992 Volvo that I'm going to give away next year when I retire.
Okay.
But it has a salvage title from when we had that hailstorm,
because
it got pimpled, but the car is mechanically perfect still. has 204,000 on it, but I want to give it away through my church. Do I incur any liability because it has a salvage title if I give the car away?
You know, I'm not a good, I wouldn't be a good guy for that, but I'll tell you what I would do. First of all, I would probably just make sure they know it. So you can put a staple something to the title that says, you know, we're going to make sure that you know this. But a salvage title just means, as you well know, that it costs more to fix it than it's worth. But obviously you've been driving it for a while. And donating to a church is a great thing. And so if I were in your shoes, I wouldn't be concerned in the least bit about donating that car.
Oh, wonderful then.
Okay.
And enjoy your show. My dad passed a few years ago, and he and I did work the cars together and restored antiques. So I just listen to you because I don't do my own work. I'm a computer guy nowadays, and I pay somebody to do my work.
Well, listen, we can probably work something out here.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question, computer guy. Sure. We just put SQL Server in our network.
You mean an SQL?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I want to be able to search our database because here's what happens. The police will call me and they'll say, can you find us an 83 LeBaron? And up until just recently, I could just go in. And let me tell you the history. It was written in DOS in 1979. 2002, we converted it to Windows. We've had it upgraded quite a bit. And we just recently had the DBase written into SQL Server.
God, I started my business in 85 writing in DBase 3.
and so, you know, exactly. So how hard would it be to put a search engine where I could go in and say, I want to pick this year or a year spread and then this make and this model? Is that hard?
Not really. Actually, it's very simple. The key would be is how your data is organized first.
Okay.
In other words, if it's still in the old DBase 3 format, you know, the fields, what we call, you know, the fields that you created.
Yep.
If the fields are easily readable, converting the data to another format, in other words, you would export it and then import it, create the file structure. The simplest thing to do is go with all brand new. If your data files are well organized, then all you would need is your new program. And a lot of these things are all cloud-based nowadays. You would upload your data, and then however you wanted to search it.
Okay.
So the search routine is fairly simple. I mean, you think about how Google works. You can basically, if you have it uploaded, those kind of search engines, search routines, can work on your own data nowadays.
Okay. All right.
You can create a data file.
And I still have my customer files and my car files and my work order files are all in fields. Just like you said.
So if you take that data, you can export it, or some of the things can actually just say, okay, what type of data is it going to be reading? And it'll automatically do its own import.
Okay.
So it's just a question of having the right guy say, hey, this is what you want to do, and then get it done.
Okay. So two questions real quick, because you're the computer guy. Do I need to worry about if I lose Wi-Fi that I lose my connection to the net, to the cloud?
Not too often. It's not going to be a real big issue. If you're in your shop, and in the shop is going to have a hard line. Now, if you're up at your camp and you're going to be doing it via like this, via your internet service, then as long as you got service, you've got access.
Okay. Okay.
You can always back it up. Like I do everything via the cloud now, but I still have like a terabyte hard drive at home that I back all my stuff up. And I have online backup service I use also, but I'm old school. I keep a permanent hard copy of all my stuff.
Okay.
Even though it's like the third rendition of holding stuff.
Okay.
But the key is the accessibility. All your shop stuff, you're going to be in your shop and you probably have a hard line to the shop for your, you know, you got the big pipe coming in there and you got a good pipe coming when you're up north and you're doing your radio show via. Didn't you guys talk about having a new place already built or something?
No, it's 100 down and 8 up north. But here it's 60 download and 8 up. So even though I have Cox Fiber to the building, ever since they put in the other 400 people around me, my service is degraded.
Yeah. And Cox, it gives you, like, you think of a big giant pipe. And if you're the only one on the pipe at 1 o'clock in the morning, it's not an issue. But 5 o'clock in the afternoon when everybody's home from work, or 7 o'clock in the evening, everybody's trying to stream music and movies. That's why I go with a VDSL from CenturyLink, a very high dedicated line. The numbers look smaller, but it's my line and nobody else is on it.
Okay.
So that's my personal preference for that.
That's okay. We can say that. We have the authority from Mark Salem to say whatever we want. And so we're not degradating either one. We're talking between two people that he's a computer guy and I'm a business guy. So I understand. When they brought fiber in, woo-wee. I mean, the fiber was smoking.
That made a big difference for even with my CenturyLink with their VDSL, because I had, the DSL direct the digital subscriber line, and I couldn't buy it originally because it stopped at 43rd Avenue and I live at 47th, and so I had a different service. But when it came up, that's my preference. I prefer a dedicated line that's mine.
Yes.
That's a personal preference from my years of doing this kind of stuff, because then I'm not sharing it. I don't get the teenager next door uploading and playing, his multi-user game with three of his buddies on consoles at the same time on the same line.
No, you're
that
right.
That makes a difference.
You're absolutely right. The only thing he didn't say was porn. You know what I mean? The only thing he didn't say. Now, you just be quiet. You just be quiet, David. I'm just bringing it to everybody's attention. He's talking about the movies and the games and all this kind of stuff. And the whole time, I'm sitting here thinking, what about the porn? I'm going to leave that there. I got up against a break. Have you got this under control? She says no. Nate's daughter's here, and she's supposed to be looking over my shoulder to make sure I hit my 30 mark, which is in 9 seconds.
She was going
to
warn you.
Yeah. She's going to slap me. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Bruce, you stay there. You're next caller. Hey, everybody. We better pull up all of our stuff and get ready to go. I'm going to talk about Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway. He's a good friend of mine. He's not a very nice guy. Sometimes he uses bad words. He knows a lot about cars. He has a really nice wife, Polly, and I'm trying to say a little good and a little bit bad about him. But he's a good guy. And I've known him since, the early 90s. So we're both kind of ornery. We're both kind of know what we're doing. We both have enough smarts to raise our hand when we're out of our class. So the BS line, not necessarily, but between the two of us we will, but not really on the front counter stuff. So the only place up in Northeast Scottsdale that I can recommend on an automobile repair facility is Blackwell Auto, 40th Street and Greenway. And he's a good guy. Let's go to the phones. It's Bruce. I told him first.
Yeah, Bruce,
you're up next.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 1970 Jeep CJ5. I bought probably 4 or 5 years ago. I'm finally getting around to trying to get it running. And it has to have an emissions inspection and everything, obviously, before I can, get the title on it and everything. So I'm trying to find out if it had initially had a smog pump on it. And I've talked to dealers and I've talked to some parts houses, and I can't get that information. Now, if I decode the VIN, it says a 225 with emissions. But,
okay. Well, there's some stickers underneath the hood that'll tell you that.
Oh, okay.
So, and not only that is that if you went to the dealer and you ordered part by VIN, don't go by application. Just say, this is the VIN of my CJ. Do you have a smog pump for it?
Okay.
And so that's an easy one. You can also go to Rock Auto on the internet and look to see what they say. But your parts store ideas are pretty good, but I'd probably start with the dealer because they're going to have the most updated data. Getting that through emissions is not going to be a problem at all, because us gray-haired guys, we know how to get those through. Not cheating them either, fixing them. But your smog pump's gonna be a problem. But then again, you're gonna have to buy the pump and the bracket, and you're gonna have to buy all the plumbing that goes into the exhaust. And all we're doing is we're pumping air into the exhaust so we can dilute it at the back of the tailpipe, which is a ridiculous notion. and that's all we're doing. Right. We're not helping the combustion any at all. All we're doing is mixing air up front, and we're the pollutants that are coming out of the back are half air now, which is what they would have been when it came out of the tailpipe anyway. So
right.
That's not that big of a deal. What part of town are you in?
I'm in Far West Valley,
okay,
north of I-10.
Okay, do you have a shop that you like?
No, not really. I mean, I use S&S, you know,
good,
for my tires and basic stuff over there in,
okay,
Avondale.
So. You might ask them if they've got a suggestion to them. The only guy I've got over in your area is 38th Street and Indian School, which is Harker's, and there's no question he can get it through emissions. I'm
right,
quite sure it's going to be better for you to find all the brackets in the... Now, do you know if the exhaust manifold has plugs in it?
Well, here's the problem. It's got... So the original owner or the previous owner put a set of headers on it, so I don't even have the original manifolds, exhaust, okay, manifolds for it. So that's another thing I'm probably going to have to be looking for.
Well, they make headers. You might have to get another header, but they make headers with the appropriate fittings for those smoke,
oh, okay,
pumps. If you'll send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, I actually know Dick Hedman from Hedman Headers. Now, he's,
oh, okay,
407 years old, but he still has his brain. And his family opened and operated Hedman Headers. And I think he would be a good guy that I could ask him if he's got a set of,
okay,
headers or if he knows where to get some. But you're going to be able to buy those somewhere used with the appropriate fittings on them. So you're going to have to obviously,
okay,
remanufacture your exhaust system from the flange all the way to the back. But they can. Most guys can adapt what you have to the exhaust port from your motor. So
okay,
the only other option you have, and this is not against the law, is would you like to buy some property in Gila County or in Navajo County or
yeah,
something like that? I'm just asking.
Yeah,
I'm just
know,
asking.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about it.
All righty. Well, good luck to you.
I did that with my motorcycles.
Well, then there you go.
I have old Harleys.
Yeah, you're probably going to use the CJ up in the mountains a lot more than you're going to use it anywhere else.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, I don't know anybody that's done that, but I heard that's available. So, anyway, thank
okay,
you very much for bringing that up, Bruce. Thank you very much. Kevin, I'm not going to be able to get you, but I promise in 3.5 minutes I'm going to get you. So stay right there. And also, Kevin and Harry, both of you guys, stay right there. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's, let me look at the clock, 42 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'm going to go straight to Kevin because I promised him we're going to go to him. Kevin,
no,
you're up
it.
First.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. First off, I want to say how entertaining your show is. Second, I wanted to know, I have a great 7.3 with a good truck attached. Where would I go to sell that?
Put that baby on. Are you the original owner and you have all the maintenance records?
No, we bought it used, but okay, we've had it for 11 years.
Okay, well, that's good enough. I am of the opinion, and I'll let you talk next, but I'm of the opinion that you can also almost get a new price for that. That's a monster motor. It's the most trouble-free motor that maybe Ford built, and it's also the bigger motor because the 6.6 in the Chevrolet side and the 6.7 in the Ford and the Dodge side, but this is a monster 7.3. And so Nate works on it more than I do. By the way, I mean, I'll make you a stand. Does it run right now?
Oh, yes, we're sitting in it.
Right.
We were going to keep it and fix it up, but we decided our life had just changed, and we decided yesterday that we're going to sell it.
Okay, real quick. What are you thinking on this thing? What are you thinking? Just give me
well,
a range.
You said that what new price or whatever it is. Well, what is a standard price for that?
Just give us a number real quick here. We got two guys that want to buy this.
Okay.
We're kidding you. Dane, what
okay,
do you think, Nate? What do you think?
I can drive it over today, and I'm looking at $14,000.
What year is it again?
02.
Oh, F-250. Okay.
How many miles are on it?
It's checking. I'm getting on there. It says 191,700.
Oh, that's about right. That's about right. I mean, you asked where to sell it at. I mean, Craigslist, Facebook, if you're on there.
Auto Trader. Yeah, all those places.
There's plenty of avenues to and for what it's worth, a busy street and a for sale sign in the window, you know, with your phone number on it, are great opportunities, you know.
You're not going to have any trouble.
My wife just said in my ear, that's what I said.
Yeah. Well, she's always right. Don't you know that? What'd you get married yesterday? All right. Here's the deal. You're going to, if you price it too low, they're going to snag it up, and then your wife's going to say, I told you so. So your biggest fear is you need to come up with a number that's high enough where they want to negotiate down just a little bit. But if you hit them with a number and they buy it first time, then I'm on her side. I'll find a good divorce attorney for her, and she'll take half that money right off the bat.
Am I too low on that then?
So, yeah, I don't know if 14. I think you need to go on the Internet and look around. I think you need to go find out what everybody else is selling those for. And then you need to grade it A through F. Is it an A truck or an F truck? Is it beat up beyond belief, or is it something that, you know, some kid could use to go to prom and wouldn't get his girlfriend's dress dirty? I mean, you just have to talk about it in that fashion.
KellyBlueBook.com, if you go there, we'll give you a good idea of what the truck's worth, too. Do I think they're high sometimes? Yes. But overall, if you look at Craigslist and look at similar vehicles, between Kelly Blue Book, you're going to find the avenue or price range you need to go.
And that's, you know, that's why Nate's flying wing with me today. KBB.com. And you put all your information in, and there's this speedometer thing.
Yep.
And on the far left, it's trade-in, and then it's private party sale, and then it's something, and then it's full list or something like that. There's like five stopping points. So you can download all the information, and then you can start looking at all those numbers. If I were you, I'd be between private party and trade-in. That would be the number that I would probably be looking at.
Okay, so. I appreciate that, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, you don't need good luck.
Not with that truck, no.
Yeah.
Not with that truck.
More on the marriage side, yeah, but he doesn't need any good luck on that 7-3. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Looks like you're going good this morning.
You know what? If you start drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning, this show's a lot of hell, a lot of fun.
I know.
That was Nate I'm talking about, not Mark.
Well, it sounds like that computer guy. Maybe you ought to kind of hire him or have him on call. But
I want to tell you something. He was impressive.
He was.
He was using words that I recognized. Well, not all of them. But when he was talking about fields and all that kind of stuff, I mean, I understood that. So it's the cloud, though. I'm just an old guy that I don't want my stuff up there. I want my stuff right here where I can find it.
Exactly.
But nevertheless, Harry, hit us between the eyes with what you got.
Okay. I know you both have mountain pulling, super duty, heavy duty diesel pickups.
Dodges.
We both have Dodges.
That should mean something to people, because they should come in and say, what kind of truck do you like? It's not really what kind of truck do you like, because we might like something that's a piece of crap that we get to work on a lot. It's what kind of truck do you drive, or what kind of truck does your wife drive is the answer.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, we're both Dodge, but go ahead, Harry.
Okay, well, I was kind of wondering, I know both you guys are really diesel, and the half tons now on a lot of the, you know, major Dodge and Ford and Chevy, too, are coming out with half-ton diesel motors. What has been your experience, or what's your opinion on these? I know Dodge had problems with their early V6 ones, and they got a new one out, and then Chevy has a four-cylinder diesel they're putting in. And I was just wondering what's your opinion. I know you haven't worked on any of them, but what's your opinion of these half-ton smaller diesel engines at the
place. We're both just itching, Harry. We're both go ahead, Nate. He's got both arms up in the air and he's waving his hands and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is exciting. We own an F-150 with the diesel in it.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely love it.
Oh.
Absolutely love it.
Okay.
By far, Ford has done their homework with it, and it's an incredible piece of machinery. I know Chevrolet's got their four-cylinder out. I've heard good things about those. EcoDiesel in the 1500s, great application again, great powertrain in my mind. The one thing I will say with all these half tons, though, is you have to maintain them. because we have seen the worst case, especially with the EcoDiesel, for whatever reason, of if you don't change your oil, you're going to be buying a motor.
All right, let me follow up on that. Yeah. We are doing a lot of the Dodge EcoDiesels.
Yes.
Because the EGR plugs up and we melt that intake manifold. So we've got a company that has a whole fleet of those, and these guys are racking up 40,000 miles a year.
Yeah.
We're talking big dollars to fix that. And there's no fix yet. Dodge hasn't come out with, this is a fix.
Right.
So when we melt down that plastic intake, it's not that big of a deal, but the bill's still going to be between $5,000 and $10,000. One way or the other.
It's crazy, but yeah.
And so I'm with Nate with respect, and oh gosh, this pains me. Maybe that Ford might be your Ford. Oh God, I'm sitting here just wanting to stick my eye with an ice pick. He might be right. That Ford might be the one.
Okay. They're great trucks overall, though. The EcoDiesel I love too. It's they're neat vehicles. Being a half ton of diesel, it's just nice. It's very nice.
Well, didn't they come out with a newer version of that EcoDiesel?
Overall,
I'm not aware.
Yeah, it's all the same. I know body and the few things have changed. Now, granted, they've made improvements here and there that are small, but it's overall the same base piece that they came out with from the start, so to my knowledge.
Here's what I know about the EcoDiesel. They've had a variety of performance and emissions enhancement software because they got caught cheating like Volkswagen.
Yes.
And so the problem with that is we just recently, and I was involved in this legal case, where I took the vehicle to a dealership, and unbeknownst to me, they reflashed it with the newest software, which causes it to go into limp mode on a regular basis, causes the temperature gauge to swing to full hot and throw you into limp mode. And when you're climbing a hill, you can't do it more than 25 miles an hour with your hazards on.
That's crazy.
It just completely destroys the vehicle. Hmm. Then when you go to trade it in, they go look at the VIN and they go, oh no, I'm not going to give you nothing for that, because they already know.
Yeah.
So the end result, there was someone who waved their magic wand and used a programmer to reprogram the truck, and it runs fine. But that programmer's coming out as soon as the new software version comes in.
Right.
And you know what they say when you ask Dodge? Fiat doesn't tell us until the day before. So is it a month? Is it 6 months? Is it 2 years? We don't know.
Right.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you, Kevin, or Harry, I'm going to go with Nate on the Ford. But I'm not going to recommend the diesel because we're working on them a lot, and there's no sign that that's going to be fixed. So.
Well, I kind of can't get past the fact that they're owned by Fiat.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that, but I did.
And I remember the old Fiats, and they were horrible.
Yeah. There's other words that we could use, but we'd probably get fined. So, but anyway,
the half ton market's exciting. There's some good powertrains out there for sure. So,
okay,
I'll take what you like. I'm kind of curious because you guys are, kind of in the know on that. So,
okay. Well, I think the half tons. You're right, and I think they run really well. We don't really know how much of a load they're going to take, but they aren't going to haul a fifth wheel, and they aren't going to haul a three axle trailer.
No.
So they're going to have a little, 16, 18-foot trailer behind them, and that's about it. So, Harry, if you've got a bunch of girlfriends that are on the heavy side, you might have to just go with one or two.
I don't think so. My wife wouldn't let me get that far along.
Oh, and tell her my apologies for making a stupid joke.
I don't know. She's reaching in the drawer for a knife. I'm not sure.
Well, that's tell her. I'm actually in Payson, so if she wants to come and knife me, tell her I'm in Payson. But anyway, thank you, Harry. Got to go. But Jay, you're up next.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah. I've got two questions for you. The subject vehicle is a 01 Dodge Dakota with the 4.7 V8.
Okay.
First question, the easy one, is do you recommend doing a pressure wash of under the hood on cars nowadays with electronics? I used to do it all the time, but I'm a little nervous about it.
I do it all the time, too, and I do it on newer vehicles. There's a thing called a throttle position sensor, and you have to stay away from that. And if you know where that's at, you're home free. The ignition system will handle water, unlike those distributor cap cars that we used to have, and you had to wait and dry them out and do all that other stuff. I like to do my engine and my engine compartment, and we own a car wash, and it's not uncommon for me to see guys with ramps and they're underneath there with a plastic mask on, and they're steam cleaning the underside of their cars. So I would say that I would do it if I were you. Just if you don't know where the TPS is at, stop by the auto parts store. Okay, then stay away from that.
You can just bag it or something too.
Yes, and you can cover it with grease.
It
you spray oil all or WD-40 all over it. Just some kind of a water repellent, and just stay away from it with the wand. That's all.
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah, great. I like that.
Okay.
The other question, I've got an oil pressure question. It's got high oil pressure, and I've got a mechanic background, you know, so I kind of have a feel for these things, but I've never had something short of a stuck pressure relief valve in the oil pump that would give me the kind of pressures that I'm getting on this. I've only had the thing about a month. I'm relocating it to a different part of the country, and so I don't have a lot of experience with it, but when I got it, the oil pressure needle on the dash was pegged, and so I didn't know if it was a pressure sender or the switch or the gauge or what, you know. So I, to save time, I just put a an oil sending gauge on it, the manual oil line gauge, where the sender unit came out, pulled the sender out, and that thing reads that let's see, I just took a quick note. About 700 RPM, it's running about 30 PSI. This is hot engine now. I just changed the oil, 5W30.
Stop. What kind of oil are you putting in it?
I put 5W30 synthetic in it.
Okay. So neither one of us are concerned with 30 PSI at idle.
Well, you haven't heard the worst part.
Okay.
That's at idle, hot. At about 1,000 RPM, it jumps to 50. At 2,000, I'm doing between 70 and 80 PSI, and at 4,000, it'll hit 90.
Okay. Well, pull the pan on it and replace the oil pump.
Down to 30 at idle.
Okay. Well, what you tell us, if we're working off your diagnosis, you got to pull the pump.
What's the risk of driving it that way?
I don't know if there is a risk, but I certainly wouldn't want you taking my grandkids to Denver, Colorado in it.
No.
I mean, you could take my daughter and son because I don't care, but my grandkids are a different story. But no, I think it's in your best interest to go ahead and pull the oil pan on it and replace the pump. Something's wrong there. The 30 doesn't bother us, but when you get into 50, 60, 70, and then you're using a 530 synthetic, something's wrong. But the faster the oil goes through the main bearings and the rod bearings and the cam bearings, it's going to carry away heat faster because the hose is on, you know, you have more pressure. So there is a good side of that. Nate, if it was yours, what would you do?
I'd be, probably looking at the pressure relief valve myself, which is most likely on the oil pump or near it. So
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And I was going to say to you, pull the pressure, the pressure gauge on it and put a manual gauge on it. Well, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
And so we know that the gauge wasn't lying. But
anyway,
mark@marksalem.com if you have an email, mark@marksalem.com. Nate, thanks very much for spending your Saturday with me.
It's been great.
You can come anytime you want. If we get into trouble, I'll stand in front of you. But just remember, I'm only going to cover half your body.
Right. Yeah.
Because Nate's like 8'1". So if I stand behind you, they're still going to be able to shoot you.
Exactly.
And yell at you and
stuff
like that. But, you know, we'll just stand there just like little boys that got caught, you know, messing around. And we'll just go, we're sorry. And those are magic words. I'm sorry, I won't do that again. I'm sorry, I won't do that
again.
and they have short memories anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. All righty, mark@marksalem.com. I want to thank Nate from Strictly Diesel. It's Pinnacle Peak and I-17 just east in that area. And if you have a diesel, may I suggest that you have, if you're up in that area or anywhere, then stop by Strictly Diesel. And they also have a website, and it's pretty cool as well. See you next Saturday right here on KKNT.